Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
Election is less than a month away, May 20th to be exact. There will be mostly local races, borough council, mayor, township supervisor, sheriff, school board, etc., etc. But there are two statewide races, Commonwealth Court and Superior Court. In November, we'll be voting on whether to give four PA Supreme Court judges, one Commonwealth Court judge, and one Superior Court judge another 10-year term. So this is a very important year for judges. My guest today is Josh Prince. He's the Republican candidate for Commonwealth Court. Thanks, Josh, for being with us.
Thanks, Diane, for having me.
I have a question. Is there going to be four PA Supreme Court judges or three? I think I made a mistake
only
on that.
Three.
Okay, so three PA Supreme Court judges up for retention. But, you know, when we talk about all the different courts in Pennsylvania, of course, we have the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which I think we all realize that's, you know, the highest court in Pennsylvania as far as that goes. Supreme Court's the highest. Then we have Commonwealth Court and Superior Court. What do those two courts do? Well, plus we have Court of Common Pleas. That's much more local, but specifically Commonwealth Court and Superior Court. What do those two courts do?
So it may be easier for the listeners to have an idea of a pyramid. So at the very lowest level, we have our magisterial district judges. They handle everything from emergency protection from abuse act orders to civil cases under $12,000, to initial proceedings in criminal matters. So they issue search warrants, arrest warrants, things of that nature. They also hold preliminary hearings in a criminal matter. Above them in each county, there is a Court of Common Pleas. So we have 67 Courts of Common Pleas here in the Commonwealth. They handle all of your different legal matters, everything from family law issues that include everything from divorce to child custody, to adoption, to wills and estate issues. So when someone dies, handling the estate through the court system, to criminal matters. And then above them, there are two appellate courts. One is the Superior Court. Approximately 85% of cases appealed from the Courts of Common Pleas go up to the Superior Court. The Superior Court handles pretty much all criminal matters, as well as all civil matters, not including government action. So if a municipality had enacted an ordinance that it was prosecuting someone under, any appeal of a determination from the Court of Common Pleas would actually go up to the Commonwealth Court. And so the Commonwealth Court is a very unique court. It is the only court in the nation that is designed to be a court of direct government oversight. It is also the only court in the nation that acts both as a trial court and an appellate court, depending on the legal issue before it. So anytime you sue the Commonwealth, a Commonwealth agency, or a Commonwealth official, the Commonwealth Court actually acts as a trial court, where it hears testimony, makes credibility determinations, takes in evidence, and then issues findings of fact and conclusions of law. Whereas anytime a Commonwealth agency issues a decision you don't agree with, let's say the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue contends you owe a tax and you disagree with that determination, any appeal of that determination would go up before the Commonwealth Court. So the Commonwealth Court is extremely important because it is that court of direct government oversight to ensure that the government stays in its lane. Also, issues that go before the Commonwealth Court include election law matters. So anytime there is a challenge to an election law issue, such as we saw previously with Act 77, which was the mail-in balloting law, the court acted as a trial court when there was a constitutional challenge to that. The Commonwealth Court had originally held that Act 77 was unconstitutional. Then an appeal was taken up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which reversed that determination. Also, educational matters would go up on appeal before the Commonwealth Court. And pretty much all the issues that affect our daily lives, the public utilities, any type of issue with those would go up in front of the Commonwealth Court. So I like to say that it is the most important court here in the Commonwealth. That isn't to say that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is below it or equal to it. Obviously, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court sits in review of the decisions rendered by the Commonwealth Court, but the sheer number of cases heard by the Commonwealth Court in comparison to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court pales in comparison. The Commonwealth Court probably issues somewhere around 6 decisions a day, whereas, and that's, you know, there's some outliers there. Some days there aren't decisions, sometimes there are more. But when you look at the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, if by the end of the year you get, you know, 150 decisions, that's a lot.
Wow.
So the sheer number of decisions are rendered by the Commonwealth Court in comparison. So above, as we mentioned already, the Commonwealth Court is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Generally speaking, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court gets to decide what cases it's going to hear. Why I say it that way, though, is if you sue the Commonwealth or a Commonwealth agency where the Commonwealth Court acts as a trial court, mm-hmm. the Pennsylvania Supreme Court actually has to hear if an appeal is taken because it's the only level of review.
Right.
Otherwise, there would be no appellate review.
Right.
So that's kind of how the court system is structured here in Pennsylvania.
So the courts are very busy. I mean, there are that many cases out there. Wasn't the Commonwealth Court, was that the one that more recently formed, or was the Superior Court? There's one that's not as old as the other.
Correct. The Commonwealth Court was formed in the 1980s. It is the youngest of the courts here in Pennsylvania. But as I said, I believe it's the most important because of its function of government oversight.
Absolutely. And that's the position you're running for. You're running for Commonwealth Court. So what made you decide to run? Why did you decide to run?
So that's a great question. There's a couple different levels to that answer. First and foremost is I've spent my career holding government accountable to the law and the Constitution. And just in relation to the Commonwealth Court alone, and just in relation to the past 6 years, I've litigated 13 cases before it. Of the 13, already won 10. Two cases are outstanding decision. The way oral argument went in both of those cases, I expect to win them. The one case I lost is actually up on appeal before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And the way oral argument went there, we actually expect for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to reverse the Commonwealth Court.
Okay.
So I could end up with 100% track record before the Commonwealth Court. Most appellate attorneys that you speak to will tell you if you have an appellate attorney that's successful 30, 40% of the time, you have a really good attorney. I'm not saying that I may end up with 100% track record to be boastful, but rather just to show that my arguments are grounded in the law and the mm-hmm. Constitution. I am not one who is an activist that is trying to twist the law into a pretzel to meet whatever, you know, I desire
whatever.
To be the case.
Right, right.
You know, so the other issue.
I was just going to say, and that's the type of judge we need, is someone who looks at the Constitution, looks at the law, and decides based on what the law says, what the Constitution says, that's what their decision is based on, not a result that they want. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's why we're seeing that erosion of public
mm-hmm.
confidence in the judiciary, because of the political non-judicial decisions being rendered. And that kind of touches on the second reason why I'm running. My wife's pregnant, and our baby girl is due in September.
Congratulations.
And I'm truly concerned. Well, thank you. I'm concerned about what type of world she's going to grow up in. We need to return to our founding documents, to the original purpose, that there were supposed to be three co-equal branches that each respected one another's lanes and that stayed within their own lanes. And with the courts now issuing these political non-judicial decisions, it's like we have kings and queens on our court. And
yeah.
we really need to return to the principles that our founding fathers gave us. We need to ensure that the judiciary only ever upholds the law as written in the Constitution as intended. And it's easy for people to say that. But what I will state is that if you really want to know where I stand, don't listen to a single word I say. Simply look at the cases I've litigated, the arguments I've made, and you will know everything you need to know about who I am, what I stand for. And that all I've ever done is, in holding the government accountable to the law and regulation, as well as the Constitution, is require that the law be upheld as written in the Constitution as intended.
And that should be the way it is. I know that you're probably best known for your Second Amendment cases. Well, what other type cases have you been involved in?
So I've handled a lot of different areas of law. You're absolutely right that I am most well known for my Second Amendment advocacy. I've handled pretty much all forms of constitutional issues, equal protection, due process, religious freedom, freedom of speech, what constitutes reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. I was also at the tip of the spear fighting the COVID mandate. A lot are unaware that the original mandate actually forced the closure of all law firms, so no one could challenge the executive decree. I was the attorney who filed a special petition with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, referred to as a King Bench application, where you basically ask the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to immediately hear a case because it's of such paramount importance. Within 48 hours of filing that, Governor Wolf found law firms to be essential, allowed to reopen. We used the same mechanism to get our gun dealers reopened, then went on to represent so many small businesses that were being fined by the Wolf administration, everything from salons and barbershops to restaurants. One a lot of people heard of was Taste of Sicily. They had been fined close to $100,000 by the Wolf administration, and we were successful in getting all those fines thrown out. Then went on to represent a bunch of parents and students who just wanted to be able to make an informed decision instead of having it shoved down their throat by their school district as to masking and vaccinations. You know, represented military officials as well and getting exemptions from the COVID vaccine. But beyond that, in my background, I've handled everything from family law issues to criminal law matters and everything in between. I've done landlord-tenant. I've done a lot of the issues that come before the Commonwealth Court. Mm-hmm. So workers' compensation, disability, only ever representing the injured worker, as well as unemployment compensation. Those are all, again, cases that go up before the Commonwealth Court. I've handled class action lawsuits when people's rights have been violated. I've done civil rights litigation. So truly, I have spent my career holding government accountable to the law and regulation and only ever representing the people. I am very proud to say I have never represented the government.
Yeah, we definitely need more attorneys who are going to hold the government accountable and not allow them to get, well, like with Governor Wolf, you know, with his mandate that everything closed down. And unless a company, because two of our sons worked for Honeywell here in the area, and they shut Honeywell down. You know, Governor Wolf shut Honeywell down. But because they were able to hire a high-priced attorney, they were able to argue that Honeywell, which made safety equipment, and that attorney was able to convince Governor Wolf that Honeywell was essential, so they were able to reopen. But talking about the small businesses and such that were so devastated by these fines because they were simply trying to keep their shops open, keep their restaurants open so they could live. I mean, you know, this was their income.
Meanwhile, the thing that needs to be discussed is the entire time, and I actually blogged about this, during the COVID mandate, Wolf's family cabinet-making business remained open the entire time.
I'm sorry, I
fail to see how a cabinet-making business is essential, but these other businesses weren't.
Exactly.
And it's abhorrent when we see these types of things. And a lot of your listeners probably are unaware, there's still actions being taken by the Liquor Control Board here in Pennsylvania against establishments that were open and had liquor licenses during COVID. And they are trying still to this day to revoke their licenses. And that's another issue.
Oh my goodness.
Any appeal of a determination by the Liquor Control Board is another type of issue that would go up before the Commonwealth Court.
Wow. I would take it from your previous comments that you do not view the Constitution, either the PA or U.S. Constitution, you don't view those as living documents that can change over time?
No, and it's funny. So when I hear people say that, I always have one question, and they can't answer it. And it shows that the Founding Fathers never intended for our constitutions, either at the state or federal level, to be living, breathing documents. Mm-hmm. And the question is very simply, if our Founding Fathers intended for the Constitution to be a living, breathing document, why did they provide an amendment process?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It would be wholly unnecessary. Mm-hmm. The Constitution would just live and breathe and evolve. There would be no need for a quote-unquote amendment process. Rather, our Founding Fathers understood that there may come a time, at least with certain provisions, that we may want to change them. And the reason I say it in that way is our founding fathers believed that our rights were bestowed upon us by a higher power. They weren't given to us by the government. Exactly. It was a government of the people. Mm-hmm. And what has been lost on our current day society is that these are rights that are given by a higher power. And that when we look at the Pennsylvania Constitution explicitly and look at Article 1, a lot of people, when they hear me start to talk about Article 1, they think I'm going to jump to Article 1, Section 21, which is our Second Amendment provision. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the more important provision is Article 1, Section 25. And what that says is that all the rights enumerated in Article 1 are accepted out of the power of government and are inviolate, meaning that the government can't touch them. Think about that for a minute. That language is so strong, and yet what is so interesting to me is there isn't a single case addressing Article 1, Section 25. I've argued it in a lot of my cases, and the courts won't even touch on it. Because in reality, what it means is the government can't take these rights away. If someone wants to limit their own rights listed in the Constitution, well, I guess that's on them. But they can't restrict anyone else's rights because these rights come from a divine power, not from the government.
Exactly, exactly. So we are right in the height, I would guess you could say, of the primary season. What's the history of primaries? Have primaries always been around since the beginning of the nation, or is that a relatively new idea?
So that's a great question. A lot of people think that primaries are constitutionally required, and that isn't the case. It's actually up to the political parties to decide, and originally they had a convention process. The convention process was where basically the party would decide whoever it wanted as its candidate. And those were the candidates up through the November election. What happened was in 1842, the Democratic Party first thought that they would never win another election again. And the reason for it is their members felt disenfranchised by the convention process. They said, listen, my voice doesn't matter. I don't like these candidates that the party's picking, but the party picks them and I don't have any say, so I'm not going to go out and vote anymore. And so the Democratic Party had to figure out what to do. And in Crawford, Pennsylvania, they came up with the solution. The solution was the direct primary process, whereby the party agreed to stay out of the initial stages of picking a candidate. They wouldn't put their thumb on the scale in any manner. And then after the primary, everyone agreed, because everyone had their voice heard, to coalesce behind whoever the candidate was. And what's interesting is that in 1860, less than two decades later, the Republican Party found itself in the same situation because it, too, was using the convention process. So it also adopted the direct primary process. What is unfortunate is that both political parties have forgotten the covenants they entered into with us in this regard, because now what we see are party endorsements. And realistically, what a party endorsement is the party basically telling we, the voters of its party, that we know better than you and you should not have any voice, but we don't want to tell you that we're going back to the convention process, because if we do that, you're going to realize that you have no voice anymore if we remove the primary. So in essence, the political parties want their cake and eat it too, because they want to issue endorsements in the primaries, tell you who to vote for, and basically make you believe that you have to vote for whoever the party endorses without you realizing that your voice is being stripped from you.
So what are they calling it if they're not calling it? I mean, it's not an official quote-unquote convention, but yet it is a convention for both parties.
Exactly.
They
call it endorsing now.
Oh, just
it, you know, whoever. Yeah, whoever has been endorsed by the party is, you know, the nominee, and the party spends significant amounts of money with it. Now, what's interesting is we just saw in the recent presidential election how the Democratic member base was really put off by the fact that they didn't have an opportunity for any primary.
Yeah.
That, you know, Biden was the nominee, and then without any, you know, action on the part of the members of the Democratic Party, Kamala became the presidential nominee.
Yeah, switcheroo.
Yeah, and what's even more interesting was about two or three days ago, we saw the vice president of the Democratic Party, David Hogg, come out and say that they are going to basically primary challenge any Democratic candidate who they don't feel is liberal enough. And yesterday, I believe it was, the president of the Democratic Party, and I'm forgetting his name, forgive me for that, but he came out and said, no, what the vice president said is absolutely wrong. We are not going to do this because it is for the people of this party in the primary to decide who the candidate should be, and officers of this party are not going to get involved in that. Okay. It's like the Democratic Party just had its own epiphany, realizing the importance of returning to the direct primary process. And I truly hope that we'll see the same with the Republican Party here in Pennsylvania, although I'm honestly not holding my breath.
Yeah, I'm very upset when the party's endorsed because, I mean, why have a primary election? Why spend all that money on a primary election when they've already, you know, basically they've endorsed the candidate and they expect you to vote for that candidate that they've endorsed? It takes the voice away from the people.
Exactly. And that's why I said earlier they want their cake and eat it too, because they don't want to tell you that we're going to revert to the convention process and strip your voice away from you. So they just want to do it clandestinely by doing these endorsements and making people believe, oh, well, this is who the party endorsed. It must be the best person for me. And what he's really telling is in any nonprofit or membership group, you always expect that the organization would be working in your best interest. You may have some disagreements with it, but generally you would think it would be selecting the best candidates. And what is so interesting is, as I was going through the PAGOP's endorsement process, I was at the state committee meeting, and it was a two-day meeting. And the first day they had a candidate forum. There was a PAGOP volunteer. She was a GOP member who volunteered to help out during that meeting, who decided to go in and watch all the candidate forum debate. And so after this, she comes running up to me. She's all happy. She's like, oh my God, finally a candidate I can agree with and I can support. And this is just so phenomenal. And I said, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. But we got to wait to see what the party does. She says, no. There's no way you're not getting endorsed and all of that. And then what happens is I say, well, let's see what happens tomorrow, because I already knew the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And that's when we saw the unfortunate bribing and threatening of state committee members and a vote that goes awry. But she comes up to me afterwards because she decided on that next day to watch the vote. And she says, I don't understand. I don't understand why the party just voted for the two weakest candidates.
Yeah.
And I said, it's politics. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, it's politics. You know, they want candidates they can control, unfortunately. Yeah. They don't want candidates that are just going to uphold the laws written in the Constitution as intended. And so she had this eye opening, and she says, well, I just don't understand. And I said, what you don't understand is because people like you don't come to the meetings and don't see how the hay is made, you don't know that the party's not picking your best possible candidates. Yeah. That's why the endorsed candidates have an abysmal 17% success rate. Now, if you wouldn't keep your CEO or your coach on if they're only successful 17% of the
That's
time.
That's for sure.
You'd fire them.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not the first time. This past, spring was not the first time that they've been the arm twisting, the threats against a state committee people if they didn't vote the way that the party wanted. I mean, I've heard that story many, many times over the years, but it's very disheartening and it's very discouraging for voters to have their voice taken away when they're not, when basically they're expected to vote for the quote unquote endorsed candidate. And unfortunately, not enough voters do their homework and they just look at those glossy flyers they get from the party advertising their endorsed candidate. So it's very, to me, very disheartening. And I know I wrote a blog post several years ago about this whole thing. You know, I think I entitled it, Why Do We Have Primaries? And I got some pushback. I may have been from state committee people, I don't know. But they were upset that I was asking the question, why do we have primaries? Why do we spend the money on primaries when the party endorses? So it's very disheartening. But I know you've been working very hard, and I know that you have a whole list of endorsements on your website. And I've been reviewing the Superior Court and Commonwealth Court candidates, and you're the only website that has any endorsements listed. So how can folks get more information about you, see your list of endorsements, and how can they contact you?
Sure. So if you go to Prince for Justice, and that's F-O-R, not the number four, so it's PrinceforJustice.com, you will find a whole bunch of information. There is a tab to click that says Meet Josh. It goes over my personal background, my professional background. We have select cases of import. It has a little synopsis of the case. If you click the case name, it'll give you even more information and background about that case. It also has tabs for endorsements. We also have a tab for volunteering. And volunteering takes a lot of different forms with our campaign. Whatever works for you, we have everything from text a friend campaigns where you can do that from your home. It doesn't take much time. It's just you sending out a preset text message that we can provide to you to text for to, you know, friends, family, anyone you can think of, and ask that they look at my background and consider me on May 20th and ask them if they agree with your assessment that you're supporting me to pass it on to, you know, 10 of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
There's also opportunities to work at the polls. We even are providing poll training. So if you do want to help us by being out at the poll locations, you can click on want to be, you know, at the poll location. And we are coordinating locations so that there aren't multiple people at any one polling location. Also, you know, if you want to be even more involved, we have a number of county coordinators, but we still have some locations where we don't have county coordinators. So if you're interested in that, like I said, there's a whole bunch of different information on the website. The other thing I would ask everyone to please like our Facebook page. So all of our social medias on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter are all the same. It's Prince for PA, because I think it was in Twitter, Prince for Justice was too long.
Yeah.
So we wanted it consistent across the board. It's all Prince for PA. But if you type Prince for Justice into any of the social medias, you'll be able to find our webpage or our social media account. Please like it. Please consider sharing our posts, because that really helps us get the name out and information out. We do have also back onto the website, but we also share it on our social medias. But on the website, we have a news section, and we have a whole bunch of different articles ever since I was running through the endorsement process up to the current day. One of the more recent articles, we actually did a comparison between myself and my opponent.
Mm-hmm.
My opponent spent the supermajority of his career working for the Department of Environmental Protection against the people.
Wow.
And this is who the PA GOP has mm-hmm. endorsed. So there's a lot of information there if you really want to get to know me, the differences between myself and my primary opponent. It's all there at your disposal. And to the extent you're willing to share it with your friends, family, neighbors, everyone else, I so greatly appreciate it. Obviously, I hope I'll be able to earn everyone's vote on May 20th.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your time and your willingness to run, especially with your wife being pregnant and that day getting closer. But, you know, I appreciate your efforts across the Commonwealth, and you be safe out there on the roads.
Thank you so much, Diane, and God bless you and all of your listeners.
Okay. God bless you too. You take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.